change a thing. Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoge, your host. Glad you could join us today on this very nice Monday morning here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Interesting and entertaining things to tell you about today, so get close to the radio, turn it up. Some really good music is going to be coming up in just a few minutes as well, as we are going to talk about with our guests from the Quality Hill Playhouse and the show they currently have running out there, Your Hit Parade, which was a television show from the, I guess it started in the 50s, ran, well, the ladies will tell us. Lauren Brayton is with us. She is one of the singers in the show, as well as Catherine Long.
They're
Hi
there.
Both with us. Lauren has been in many shows around town. Where haven't I seen Lauren at, around town so far? Sings at a lot of the venues and Quality Hill Play. I guess, however, I've never seen you at the Rep. I guess you.
I have been at the Rep. I was in Into the Woods.
Oh, she was into. Okay.
Yeah.
So she was. I have seen her. Congratulations! Thank you for being with us again today.
Absolutely.
Catherine Long is with us. I've seen her before at Quality Hill Playhouse.
Yes, indeed.
Around town at the Lyric Opera. In fact, you're going to be in one of the upcoming shows at the Lyric Opera.
I am. Yes, I'll be one of the female choristers in Deflatormouse this spring. So that should be a lot of fun. It's kind of one of more like a musical than a lot of operas, because there are spoken lines as well as sung things. So a great entry point for people who have maybe never been exposed to opera before.
Yeah, I should expose her here. She's married to Brian Wilson.
Very soon to be the bass player.
Yes. Oh, very soon to be. Yeah.
Well, we're getting married on March 8th in Virginia. So
it's a musical family.
Yes. Funny thing is that I think in each of our respective families, there is no musicianship that goes on. So it'll be fun to see what happens with our kids.
People have these visions, I'm sure, of him playing the bass at home. That probably never happens.
You know, we have talked about taking the time to kind of woodshed things together to work on genres maybe that we're not as comfortable with.
Ah.
So we do try to encourage each other as much as we can when we're at home. But no, the quiet serenade in the corner, that doesn't happen so much.
Well, congratulations on
Thank
that.
Thank you.
You're both in a great show right now at Quality Hill Playhouse. It's called Your Hit Parade. It's a revival. Kent said that was one of his most, if not his most successful show.
Yeah, that's what's going on this season is we're doing reprises of the most successful shows over the last 25 years. 18 of them were at Quality Hill Playhouse, because Kent, did other work at other theaters, before he started at Quality Hill. But, Your Hit Parade was first a radio show, and then it went to television, and its span was over 24 years between 1935 through 1958. And I think it had an extra run for another year after that on CBS. It was on NBC for most of that time when it went to television. But, we're celebrating the nostalgia and history of the show. Your Hit Parade was a show where they would have a group of singers come on and sing the hits of the week. And so it was focusing on the music rather than the individual performances of the show and of the songs. And that's eventually what kind of killed the show, is people wanted to see Elvis perform Jailhouse Rock and not Snooky Lanson or something.
Snooky wasn't bad.
No, not at all. But, that's just kind of, how it happened.
So just to clarify for people, if it was a hit by Rosemary Clooney, you wouldn't necessarily see Miss Clooney do the show in your hit parade. It would be one of the singers from the, I guess they probably had a regular staff of performers.
In essence, they had house singers, a number of singers that were on the show week to week, and they would dole out the songs that were to be sung. And if it was a song that was featured week after week, they would try to give it to different individuals or turn it into a group number or something of that sort to keep it interesting. Kent talks about Mr. Sandman. It was in the top 10, if not the number one, for weeks and weeks. And talking of one of the performances, because they really did try to do skits. It was a show that was a bit more of a musical comedy, because they tried to present them not just as singers in front of a big band or an orchestra, but really to stage them and create little vignettes. In fact, maybe sort of the precursor to something like Saturday Night Live.
Uh-huh.
Of course, we never talked about that before. But it just kind of came to me that it's, you know, they really tried to present stories along with the songs. And in the sense of them having a set sort of stable of singers, it's very similar to the way that we do perform at Quality Hill.
Absolutely.
Because we really do celebrate the music. It's, of course, you know, later in the season there's a show that's all Sinatra, so of course it's celebrating him, which in fact was the most successful show.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, of course, everybody loves Sinatra. He was such a quintessential performer. But with the exception of a show like that, it really is about the music. It's about mm-hmm. the lyrics or the composer or something of that sort. And so we are really, as singers, the vehicle through which we are expressing someone else's someone else's art.
Yeah, was it, I guess when he first put the show together, has it been 10 years? I had to put that on my notes. When did Kent first do this?
I think it was 2007.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it hasn't been quite that long.
Not quite that long.
Was it hard for him to, from what he's told you, was it hard for him to put together the numbers that he would have in the show? That's because there's so many he could pick from.
Absolutely. And, you know, I imagine it was difficult. And a lot of, you know, he likes to choose songs, too, that suit the performers in the show. And the original cast, you know, he's trying to bring back some of the original cast members. Our show's a little different. You know, the previous cast was Karen Arrington, Tim Scott, and then Allison Sneegus and Melinda McDonald. And so, you know, he chose the songs based on those individual voices and, you know, and then he cast us, you know, to kind of cover that and
fill
in the open slots.
I doubt that Kent himself sang in the one in 2007.
I think he did. 16 tons.
Okay.
Yes.
And, the same number he does.
Mm-hmm.
In.
Yes. Yeah, and he sang a lot.
And has a lot of
group numbers.
With it as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember that as an Ernie Ford song, or was it someone else?
I don't know.
I'm
thinking of the Tennessee Ernie Ford version, but there may be other versions.
I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but it's going on right now. Performances pick up again tomorrow night, Tuesday the 15th. At 7:30 p.m. at Quality Hill Playhouse. Quite a load of performances for all of you. Two shows, for instance, on Wednesday, one at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, one at 7:30 at night. All of the evening performances are at 7:30. The
yes.
afternoon shows are at various times, but basically if it's during the week, it's at 1 o'clock p.m.
Yes. Correct.
If it's on Saturday, it's at 3, and if it's on Sunday, it's at 3 as
yes,
well.
Yes, correct. Exactly.
So if it's a weekday mm-hmm. performance, it's at 1.
Yes.
If it's a weekend performance during the day, it's at 3. Yes. Otherwise, they're all at night at 7:30.
That's right.
So a lot for you to do. The number to call for more information, and I know you want to get this down exactly because you want to know exactly which one, 816-421-1700 or qualityhillplayhouse.com, and you can click through and make arrangements that way as well. We're speaking with Lauren Brayton and Catherine Long, two of the singers in the show. There are two others, Molly Kammer and Tim Scott, also participate
yes.
with you. Do you get picked to do your particular song by your voice and all of that?
Do we get to pick?
Yeah.
You're Mr. Sandman.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to say, I think that's one of the most difficult tunes that we sing because we have to really try to emulate one another's voices.
Mm-hmm. A lot of blending.
Exactly. It's one of those songs that, you know, it's best if you can't differentiate who's singing what.
Absolutely.
And I think that at Quality Hill Playhouse, that's one of the most challenging things we do as singers is working on numbers that often Kent harmonizes with really intricate harmonies mm-hmm. where, you know, one inner voice will move at, you know, halfway through a measure and it completely changes the chordal structure. And it's very, very difficult to kind of become more sound than individual. Mm-hmm. And
more like an instrument.
Exactly. That's mm-hmm. a better way to say it.
And Kent Barnhart, our executive director, you know, over there, he's so great about bringing those little nuances out in each individual song. And that's what makes Quality Hill Playhouse the great, you know, venue that it is. I mean, you get these great songs with excellent musicianship, a great band, and, you know, it's a lot of people don't know the behind-the-scenes work that goes on, you know, but that's why mm-hmm. it sounds so great, you know, mm-hmm. it's because of that attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he excels, or seems to excel, excels, at arrangements, making various arrangements.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it seems to be patterned for instance, your voice and, mm-hmm. and the other singers as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, a lot of singers come away from Quality Hill Playhouse feeling like they've learned so much, you know. He's such a master at understanding the voice and how it works and brings out the best in each individual voice. You know, people have likened it to having voice lessons or
right.
a coaching. You know, I've learned so much from him over the years. So,
and I think, too, because of the space, it is such an intimate space. Mm-hmm. And maybe for someone who hasn't worked as much with a handheld microphone, a lot of times, I know for me, when I first started working there, it was about learning restraint, how to be communicative, but not in a singing at the top of your voice manner that is so popular in music theater nowadays. You know, that belting and all of that, there's a place for it at the Playhouse, but those are the exceptions. And the challenge for me, I know, at first was learning how to sing beautifully and to communicate the song while still being aware of the space and again, like I said, learning a bit of restraint as a singer instead of just letting it all hang out all the time.
Sure, and how different it must be from, well, singing opera.
Of course.
It's a completely different way of singing.
Yes, and really any type of big theater performance, mm-hmm. whether it's Into the Woods mm-hmm. or an opera or even rock singing, you know, anything where it's really about just letting it go, whereas this, you know, and I think it's because we're focusing on the music and about, it's not about us.
No.
Of course, we have the opportunity to show our talent and to enjoy the performance, and, you know, we are the front of the whole thing, but it's, you know, it's more about the music and the arrangement and the harmonies and the style
mm-hmm.
than it is
listening
about
to each other.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
than it is about stepping out there and saying, look at me.
Sure. It's songs of that era. Well, I guess I can't blanketly talk about songs of that era, but it just seemed, and I was talking with a friend about this after the show, the songs seem to have more meaning than they do today.
Yes.
So the numbers
yes.
sometimes told their own story.
Exactly.
Yes.
A lot
yeah.
more storytelling
mm-hmm.
as opposed to not so much storytelling.
Blaring and chanting. Blaring and chanting.
Yes, thank you.
That's a good way to describe it.
The show is Your Hit Parade. It's a season of revivals at Quality Hill Playhouse. And you can learn more about the season and all of that by getting on their website, qualityhillplayhouse.com, or calling their box office number at 816-421-1700. We're speaking with Lauren Brayton and Catherine Long. They're both in the show. There are actually, well, five singers in the show, if you want to count.
Mm-hmm.
Kent.
Exactly.
Basically four. And a lot of the numbers, you do have to work together, as you said earlier. The harmonizing, is that probably the hardest thing you all do, is learning how to harmonize together? Because everyone's voice is a little different.
Yeah, they're very tight harmonies, and it takes a lot of rehearsal. You know, and again, like what we were just talking about, blending the voices inside of those harmonies. So we also have, I don't know if we've mentioned Julian Goff on drums.
Right.
And, of course, Brian Wilson on bass. So, you know, they add a lot to that as well.
So much. And, you know, the work that they do is just as detailed and specific as the work that we do. Because they try to emulate the style of how it would have been performed the first time around. So, you know, when Julian or Brian do their solos on Jailhouse Rock or This Can't Be Love, they're doing a solo that someone who was playing in the time that the song was on the top 10 charts. They're playing in that style, as opposed to, you know, what so many people today do, whether it's not that that's a bad thing, but if you were playing This Can't Be Love in a jazz gig, it would have a modern color to mm-hmm. the way a solo was taken. But they work, the band, Brian and Julian with Kent, work very, very hard. I mean, I would say almost tirelessly, to mm-hmm. really be true to what the song was at the time it was written, mm-hmm. so that we are doing an honest rendition of the song as it would have been heard on
back
your hit
that
parade.
Time, yeah.
Here are all kinds of numbers like this. If you go see Your Hit Parade, running now at Quality Hill Playhouse. Performances pick up again tomorrow night, the 15th at 7:30. There are both. Is Wednesday the exclusive day for a weekday matinee?
Yeah, I think we're done with our Thursday matinees
yes.
now. We switch to Wednesday now. So
okay.
Wednesday matinees and then a Saturday matinee now
as well as
through the rest
okay.
As well as Sunday through the rest of the run.
Wednesdays and Saturdays are afternoon matinees. There's a Sunday afternoon matinee, of course, but the rest of the time it's at 7:30 in
yes,
the evening.
Yes.
And of course, you need to call them to get the exact days and all of that. But it's at QualityHillPlayhouse.com, and the number to call at the box office. Well, they will be happy to answer your questions. Is 816-421-1700. Quality Hill Playhouse is located in downtown Kansas City at 303 West 10th Street in the Quality Hill neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Down in Kansas City, we're speaking with Lauren Brayton and Catherine Long, two of the four singers in the show. And it's as you mentioned earlier, it's a season of revival.
Yes, of the most successful. Some of the most successful shows, and so the rest of this season you'll see all Sinatra
uh-huh.
with Melinda McDonald and John Doherty. That's going to be a super sexy show. So
yeah, John Doherty does a good. I've seen him.
He really does.
Place. He does a good Sinatra.
He does. Yeah, and he's just a doll, a wonderful person. And then the next show is going to be. Great duets of musical theater, so that'll be fun. And then Rhapsody and Gershwin. And the audiences will be able to hear Kent play the entire Rhapsody in Blue, which I have witnessed, and it is absolutely stunning. It just, people just leap to their feet. And then we have Musical of Musicals again. If you have not seen that show, it is hilarious. I saw it when they originally did it, and I laughed through the whole thing. It's just a great, great show. So, and then
we do also have our seasonal shows. We have mm-hmm. a Christmas as well as a New Year's show. The New Year's show this year is another reprise, in essence.
Yeah.
It's the cast from You've Got a Friend, the second to last show from last season. It's
mm-hmm.
all the 60s, 70s
music,
right?
James Taylor.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a great show.
That is Molly Hammer, Tim Scott, Jesslyn Kincaid.
Uh-huh.
The boys will be back playing on that show as well, Brian and Julian. And then at Christmas, Christmas every year is... Actually, I think it might be the most popular show of the season. People love to bring family, you know, in or out of town. And that's always different. He chooses a different cast every year and really tailors the show to their voices and their strong points. So mm-hmm. I know I was in the Christmas show last year, and because we had a couple of singers that myself and then Sarah LaBar were more classically trained, and so it kind of had a classical edge to it, which isn't to say that... This year you might not hear Santa Baby and things of that sort. It really just depends on who he hires and the type of show he'd like to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He also has a sing-along.
He does, yes. There are, I think,
the
two sing-alongs.
Yeah, I'm not certain. Are they doing that this year? I really don't know.
We haven't talked about it yet, but
they have happened
the
in the
third
past,
year.
Though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that has always been a lot of fun. He chooses a singer to come and lead the audience, and it's... Great carols and popular Christmas songs.
Yeah,
an opportunity for you to sing in Quality Hill Playhouse.
A lot of people, that would never happen. But it can happen in this particular instance. You've got a great show going on.
Thank you.
Your Hit Parade, a season... This first show of a season of revivals at Quality Hill Playhouse, and that will play through Sunday, the 27th of October. Two more weeks to go, if I'm reading this.
That is correct.
A lot of performances.
October 27th
yes.
is our last show. And
a lot of performances, so keep your voices in fine working order.
Yes.
Thank you.
What, do you do two shows in one day? Is that difficult?
You know, it's It just depends on the day, I guess.
Right.
It's not. This is definitely a high energy show, but I don't feel so exhausted that I, you know, need to collapse or anything. You know, but yeah, I think we're able
as long
to.
As you can have some downtime in between.
Yeah,
it's not too difficult.
No.
It's more having the physical energy than it is, for me anyway, the vocal energy.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank
you.
Us
all about it.
Come on
Absolutely.
Out.
Quality of the show is called Your Hit Parade, based on the television show of the same name. And they'll be singing many of the songs that were on Your Hit Parade.
Yes.
Back when it aired, I guess, on NBC first. And then
NBC first, well, radio, then NBC mainly.
Had a long run.
Had a long 24-year run.
Yeah, thanks so much for being with us. Lauren Brayton. You've seen her all over town, and television, things like that. Catherine Long, look forward to seeing her here and later on at the opera.
Thank you.
Well. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're
going to
take
you.
Our break. When we return, we're going to tell you about a unique event that will be coming up, something you'll want to hear about when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Director Paul Greengrass brings the patented docudrama style he used in United 93 and the Bourne films to the involving true-life thriller Captain Phillips. Tom Hanks plays the title character, whose cargo ship is overtaken by a small band of Somali pirates. The convincing performances and skillful handheld camera technique add to the movie's realism. Even though most of us know the outcome to this story, the film still manages to build substantial tension. Machete Kills is the sequel to the violent 2010 exploitation movie homage Machete, which was in turn based on a fake trailer from the movie Grindhouse. Danny Trejo returns as the ex-federale who's assigned by President Charlie Sheen to bring down arms dealer Mel Gibson. The joke is worn very thin, so Machete Kills may signal it's time to kill this franchise. Inequality for All is an enlightening documentary presented by economist Robert Reich, former labor secretary under Bill Clinton. It focuses on income inequality in America, which is reportedly at an all-time high, and explains the reasons for the gap and its consequences for the overall economy. Yes, it's a real horror movie. Escape from Tomorrow is a micro-budget sci-fi horror drama that was surreptitiously filmed at Disney World. The bizarre and surreal black-and-white entry is intriguing, but the final product isn't quite as clever as its premise. Also opening this week, Unlimited is an adventure drama whose main character, played by Fred Thompson of Law & Order, is modeled after Kansas City resident and former NASA scientist and entrepreneur Harold L. Finch. Romeo and Juliet is a controversial adaptation from screenwriter Julian Fellowes of Downton Abbey fame. His dialogue severely truncates Shakespeare's poetry. Red Wing is a faith-based production starring Bill Paxton that's loosely based on a George Sand novella. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Freeze Frame!
Support for KKFI provided by Santora's Pizza, 3834 Main, Kansas City, Missouri. Open daily with late-night delivery featuring pizza by the slice, pizza pies, pasta, and sandwiches. Pick up or delivery at 816-756-1616.
This week, a conversation with the new dean of the Washington National Cathedral. A former English teacher, he says he finds deep spiritual meaning in poetry.
It's not that I don't find abstract theology interesting, but intellectual argument doesn't speak to me as much as artistic expression.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before the Jazz Disciple.
This week on the Pacifica Radio Archives from the Vault, we present the recently digitized 50-year-old KPFK program celebrating the life of physics godfather Albert Einstein, March 14, 1962, on the occasion of Einstein's 83rd birthday. Narrator James Wilcox introduces the program and accompanies us through the musings of Upton Sinclair, Julius Sumner Miller, Jimmy Durante, Herschel Bernardi, and Edward G. Robinson, Wednesday morning at 5.
Next time on L.A. Theatre Works, two best friends square off in a high-stakes game of truth, identity, and romance.
I'm in love with Gwendolyn. I've come up to town expressly to propose to her.
I thought you would come up for pleasure. I call that business.
The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. Next time on L.A. Theatre Works.
Wednesday evening at 7, right after the All Souls Forum.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. We're going to talk now about a one-man, one-hour adaptation of Shakespeare's King Lear. If that doesn't sound difficult enough. It's a partnership with the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater and a benefit for the Homeless Services Coalition of Greater Kansas City. What makes it so interesting, what caught my eye as I read about it, Alan, Poor Lear, an adaptation of Shakespeare's King Lear, patterned for you. I am going to assume, Alan, written by you.
Actually, it's thoroughly Shakespeare. I have changed maybe four words to make it, some of the words, understandable for a modern ear. For instance, one of the lines is, all Germans spill at once that make ingrateful man. I've changed it, all germs spill at once. And that's the only thing I've changed. What's been reimagined is the setting. It's a homeless person in a park, and he performs Lear with his assistants. I have Lauren Pope is my assistant, and comes on and does a little inter, the scene changes with pieces of cardboard and helps me clean up the mess I make.
Yeah, well, let me do a proper introduction.
Yes, absolutely.
Alan Tilson is his name. He's with us. He has performed in 17 Metropolitan Ensemble Theater productions on the main stage at the Library Script in Hand series, toured with the Met's Hindu and the Cowboy for 7 years, has performed at the Kansas City Repertory Theater, the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival. Now, that's not much of a stretch. At Theater for Young America, at the Living Room, the Coterie, performed in the Miser at Union Station. I believe I did an interview for that.
Yes, you did.
At the Oregon and Colorado Shakespeare Festivals, at the Minnesota Shakespeare Festival, at the Black Hills Playhouse, and at various fringe festivals around the country. Am I missing?
That's it. That covers. That makes me feel old. Yes.
Oh no, not at all. Oh, the Black Hills. What is Chipper to the Hills? Did you do that?
No. It's one of the oldest summer stock theaters in the country, actually. People that are my age might remember Alva Stanley with Missouri Rep back in the 60s and 70s. He started there. A lot of people around the country from the upper Midwest and the Midwest go there to perform in the summer. They do four or five shows, and I was there. Well, Ron Schaefer, who teaches stage management here at UMKC, cast me, and Marilyn Lynch, Matt Weiss, Emily Peterson, Jay Akins were all there together and had a wonderful time doing Leading Ladies. And unfortunately, the theater was built by the WPA and had been condemned that year we were there, so we had to stay in an old nursing home, which was turned out to be unlike any nursing home you probably can imagine, full of actors and stage manager people. But and we commuted to Custer, or to Rapid City, rather, and then we toured.
What was it I saw? I was a youth then. I believe it was a passion play.
Well, maybe, yeah. I don't know, but they've normally done summer stock, and it came out of the University of South Dakota, I think, and I'm going to get the name wrong. Was it Aberdeen or somewhere around there originally? A guy in his pickup truck started the thing. But it's had a lot of famous and semi-famous and not-so-famous actors perform there over the years.
Oh,
and I'm not going to say which one I belong to.
Well, infamous.
Infamous, yes.
I'll say infamous in your case. But, you know, you've done a wealth of Shakespeare over the years. You've done almost every one.
I got addicted early on. Actually, in high school, I hated it. And my first acting class, I had the acting teacher. We all had to do a scene from Shakespeare. And I ran away from class for 2 days. I went to Salina, Kansas, and hit out with a friend rather than do this speech. And I came back, and of course, you know, had to pay the piper. And he said, okay, let's do your scene. And I did it, and I got through it, and it was horrible. It was Brutus from Julius Caesar. Romans, friends, countrymen, lend me your ears. And I was horrible. And he said, oh, he gave me a bunch of directions, said, okay, now do it again. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it again. And I threw a little temper tantrum on stage in front of God and everybody. And he says, okay, now you've had your little temper tantrum, and let's do it again. I was so angry that I did it, and I felt one. The whole place broke out in applause. And he says, there, you've eaten your spinach. And I found it to be very therapeutic, you know, and then I got hooked. And then the second thing that got me hooked was Romeo and Juliet, Zeffirelli's movie, came out that summer. And we were watching it at a drive-in with a bunch of buddies and friends. And at the same time they were landing on the moon, that night. It was a full moon. You could see the moon. And here was this 400-year-old piece of literature. I fell in love with the language, with the story. I didn't speak for 3 days. I was so moved that by the story. And that from then on, it was Shakespeare.
Yeah, yeah. No. Now I'm going to assume at some point you've done King Lear, maybe more than once.
I have done Gloucester in King Lear with the Circle in the Square in Minneapolis. It's an old famous theater in downtown, the Seven Corners of Minneapolis. I did Gloucester. Keanu Reeves came and saw us, and he said the worst thing you say to an actor after he was working on Hamlet, his first Shakespeare in Canada at the time. He was wonderful, generous, lovely. He came backstage and met all of us, and he was so generous. But he said the dumbest thing anybody can say to an actor was, "How do you memorize all those lines?" And he was like, "Oh, my God, this guy's a model. He's not an actor."
You know, well, he did the movie.
He did the movie.
So he had to learn it in little pieces.
He had to learn little pieces.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But he was a wonderful guy. But so I did that there, and I've had speeches. To me, King Lear is the apogee of English literature. I must confess, I have an English degree, and it's just the language, the word selection, the syntax, and the theme of loyalty and forgiveness. I mean, you don't get better than that. And to me, it's I've had speeches, about 8 speeches memorized for years and years and years in my little bag of monologues. Uh-huh. But when I did it for, I did it in the Fringe, about 5 years ago, and I did the tragedy section of it. My 3 daughters were in the audience, and I found when I just did the monologues, it was so full of misogyny. I mean, it can be that I got ill at my stomach afterwards, and with my daughters and being so these horrible things you say about women, and I said, you know, I've got to do this in the context of the narrative so it isn't so misogynistic, because it really is about his relationship with his daughter Cordelia that is redeeming in the end.
So where did you get the idea? Well, let's briefly go over the story. Somewhere along the line, you got the idea of turning this into a one-hour adaptation.
Yes, well, I found the monologues. Just, you know, I love doing it. I did it mostly for me, to keep in shape, actually. But I found, you know, you've got to have to involve an audience. If you're up there in front of an audience, you want them to participate in narrative. It has to have a narrative framework. And after 4 years of doing monologues, I go, duh. I was looking for a one-man show. So I went to Alan Cummings was doing his, can I say, Macbeth in a radio studio without having to turn around 3 times.
You know, I think it's jinx to say it.
Okay,
in a radio
good.
Season.
I can say that.
Chris, you're not too far from
I'm not too far from Met or Unicorn, so I got to be careful. In the theater, if you say Macbeth, you got to turn around 3 times counterclockwise and say a line from Midsummer Night's Dream. I did quote it when I was doing that, Lear, and half an hour later I had a gash in my head from a sword and had to have 8 stitches. So I have learned my lesson. You don't quote that on stage or mention it in the theater. Anyway, back to the story. I had heard Alan Cummings was doing a one-man Macbeth, and I was in New York at the time. My daughter was there at grad school, and he was in Brooklyn. I couldn't get over there, and I said, if that ever happens again, I am going to make sure I see that. Well, he brought it back in April, last April. And so I got tickets front row and center on Shakespeare's birth and death day, April 23rd, front row and center, and saw his one-man Macbeth. It was an hour and a half. And I must admit, he convinced me it was so doable. You know, he put it in a contemporary narrative of a mental home. And so you had sympathy with him right away as the modern audience went, oh, okay, I can handle this because it's in a modern setting. And then he also gave him the license because he didn't have 26 people there as an army. It gave him artistic license as a crazy person to make the transitions and keep the narrative going using the setting of the mental home. I thought, that's a ticket. And I could see how I'm English major. I know how to cut a script to make it workable, although I'm on my 9th draft, I must say, for this production. The thing was, what setting do I need to do for Lear? Well, I walk along Brush Creek. I live on the Pleasant, and I walk every day under the bridges, and I always memorize my lines walking along Brush Creek. And I pass homeless people every day. Well, you know, you'd think I would have got the idea. No, it was like 2 weeks after I got back from New York, I was walking along, and there was a homeless. Oh, my God. Lear's a homeless. He's kicked out of home. He is, and it talks about the hovel that he lives in. Ba-ding, you know, right there in your own backyard, like Dorothy in Oz. as always, it's in your own backyard. And from then on, I got a director, Taylor St. John, who does a marvelous work, the one-person shows. And also, I knew he was going to be the kind of director who wouldn't let me get away with anything. And he's been fabulous. He's constructed this thing to make it make sense in that contemporary setting, the homeless person. If the audience doesn't know the words, what the words exactly mean, he's directed it so that the physicality will make sense. And also just the narrative of what's going to happen to this homeless person. It takes you out of that Shakespearean kind of classical, boring category of what people think of when they think of classical, maybe Shakespeare theater, and makes it a contemporary story.
Like, yeah, but every word is
every word is Shakespeare, except for maybe four.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Except for maybe four. But yeah. Sounds like an interesting concept.
That's yes, I'm like so excited. I'm hitting myself over the head. Why did it take me 40 years to figure this out?
Oh.
Why didn't I figure this out 40 years ago? I'm in love with it. I'm going to take I've got an artist in residency in Florida, Seaside,
yes.
Florida. Escape to Create for a month in February. I hate to leave Kansas City in February. But I'm going to be there. And then I'm going to take it back here for the Fringe and then Minnesota Fringe. And then I'm entering the Midtown Festival in New York City. And then there's some other places that have asked me to come and perform for benefits for homeless services coalitions and Episcopal community services around the country. So I'm so excited.
Yeah, well, the first performance is the 17th, which is this Thursday, at 7:30 p.m. at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater.
At the beloved Metropolitan Ensemble Theater.
Where you're one of the core members.
I'm a core member there, yes. Yes, yes. And it's just, it reminds me so much of the old Missouri repertory where I trained as an apprentice with Marilyn Lynch and Alan Boardman and Art Suskin. And Bobby Elliott was a star back in those days, as he still is, of course. it's just, we do things, we get in there and produce these marvelous classic shows of big casts and a lot of energy and intensity.
During those years, didn't they do at least one Shakespeare every
year? Oh, absolutely. Rest? Absolutely. We did Shakespeare every year. Yes, well, I did The Tempest. Bobby Elliott's Caliban is still in my head. His Caliban was marvelous. Alva Stanley played Prospero in that. And old Art Ellison, oh, my goodness, old radio man here for years and years and years in Kansas City, was one of our mentors. And we did that was with the William Woodman from the Goodman Theater directed that. Then we did the next year, we did Measure for Measure. John Houseman from Juilliard directed that. We worked with some fantastic directors that Dr. Mack brought in. In fact, Rod Alexander, who was the head of Dartmouth, directed Stacy Keach, starring role at Ashland, Oregon, Henry V, that gave Stacy Keach his start in, and he directed us. Bob Elliott played the lead in Exit the King, and he was the guy that got me into Ashland, Oregon then that next summer. And I got a job before I finished my degree, so I went hopping off to theater landing.
I remember seeing a show there. Was it Shakespeare? It probably was. Vincent Dowling.
Vincent Dowling, yes. He was.
The Irish gentleman.
Yes, and that was Bobby Elliott worked with him quite a bit and was his great mentor and and director. Who just recently passed, you know, last year.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's going to be outstanding. Performances begin this Thursday, the 17th at 7:30, then continue Friday, the 18th at 7:30, Saturday, the 19th at 7:30. If you're a day person, that day on Sunday, the 20th, at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, located just down the street from us at 3604 Main Street. It's the same one where Karen Paisley has her productions going on down there. And the number to call for more information, I hope this is the right one. Yeah, I believe it is. 816-569-3226. That's the same number as the Met box office.
Yes, it is.
They're making it simple. Now, this is a partnership with Metropolitan Ensemble Theater and a benefit for the Homeless Services Coalition of Greater Kansas City. What can you tell us about those folks?
Yes, Vicki Riddle has been a wonderful, she's the head of the CEO of the Homeless Services Coalition of Greater Kansas City. And I didn't realize I knew her, but when I was walking with the homeless, I've always wanted theater to kind of not be so navel-gazing. I always think we're a community. We need to reach out more and be in touch with when we bring these issues on the stage. I always like to a connection with the real issues that are out there. And so I sent an email to the homeless Greater Kansas City Homelessness Service Coalition. I said, you don't know me. My name is Alan Telson, but I'm interested in partnering and doing a little advocacy for your organization. Vicki wrote back and said, Alan, I've seen you. She's seen all my history Shakespeare monologues twice. She's come to every Met performance, seen me in everything. I'm a fan. I didn't know I had a fan. And then Vicki and I got together and had coffee, and we're like old soulmates, and she's been marvelous. And she's going to open the performance every night with a short little introduction on about the homeless and homeless advocacy. But she's a dynamite. Been in social services for many, many years, and worked for Catholic Charities, and now is the CEO for the Homeless Services Coalition. And her chairman of the board, John Hornbeck, is the head of Episcopal Community Services, and they're going to provide munchies after our opening show reception from the Community Kitchen Culinary School, which are men who have come through the kitchen, and they have taught how to be cooks and chefs, and they're going to provide treats for us on the opening night.
Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
To kind of teach them a
skills
trade.
Of how to, you know, help be self-sustaining.
Yeah, that's a wonderful idea.
And all actors are concerned about self-sustenance.
Well, I'm sure. On the email I got, there was a number and website for the Homeless Services Coalition. I don't have it with me now, but I'm sure that they can find it quite easily.
Yes.
If they want information.
Homeless Services Coalition of Greater Kansas City.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're the umbrella organization for all the homeless agencies in town and the area.
Yeah, and what a clever idea to turn King Lear or Lear into Lear.
Poor Lear. This
poor
is a poor Lear.
Lear.
Yes.
Poor Lear now.
Yeah.
What can you tell us, without giving too much away, about this gentleman? And how did he get in this homeless situation that he's in?
Yes. Well, he was giving away. He's getting old, as some of us are. And I've been downsizing the last 10 years. I got rid of my car 10 years ago. I'm getting simpler. And my daughters, I've been concerned about their welfare, you know, and splitting up my little kingdom, very little, but that's what he's doing. He's looking at his final years, and he's divesting himself of his property. The only problem is that he is so used to people. How do I say this on the radio? Kissing his
posterior
that he wants them to say how much they love him. It's uh-huh. He's kind of an egomaniac. There are four different kinds of Lear that have been performed over the years. The titan, the majestical kind of guy, the monarch, full of pride, the madman Lear, and then the common man Lear. I'm kind of doing a version of the common man and madman for this particular performance. But he lets his ego get in the way of him, and then he turns to his two other daughters that he split the kingdom with, they kick him out eventually because he's got all his party buddies with him. And so he eventually gets kicked out of both of their places, or he leaves rather than put up with their conditions.
Uh-huh.
And so he finds himself outdoors in the storm, in the rain, in the cold.
What a clever attitude.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Did you meet and talk with any of the homeless
people? I have. I am a retired Episcopal priest, and I've always kind of had feeding programs in my parishes. My seminary was kind of, you know, glorify God by getting in the trenches and whatever the need is in the community. So I've had feeding programs in Minnesota and in Kansas City, Kansas, there. And then, yes, so I've got to know they're people.
Sure.
They're people, aren't they?
They sure are.
And there's
yeah.
different reasons for homelessness. It's not all one general calamity that happened. There's many different reasons.
You know, I've always kind of thought of people of the cloth being also performers in their own right.
Well, that's true.
It's kind of
interesting. Yes, in the Episcopal Church, our main title is celebrant, and we're at the Eucharist. We enact the Lord's Supper, don't we? And so, even though it's more Japanese in its stylistic kind of moments, it's a little enactment of the Lord's Supper that we do. So I used to joke and say I got an acting job where I've got, you know, good costumes and good props and a steady paycheck. The bishop doesn't smile on that.
Oh, he does.
I don't think so.
Certainly he should
no.
see the humor
so,
in
so
that.
No, that's between you and me.
You know, the selling God, if you want to put it that way,
yes.
is a kind of showmanship.
Well, and I think that the thing I really enjoyed the most was that moment of creating that moment. It's a creating. You've got the God, the playwright, and the priest actor, and the congregation, the audience, and you have a communion. You have a unity of experience in that moment together, and that's what acting is. You know,
and creating this poor Lear character has to give you a lot of personal satisfaction.
Oh my goodness, does it ever! It's cathartic. I said I don't need therapy as long as I've got an acting role, and this one is definitely it. It's very cathartic. Marilyn Lynch and I go back 40 years, and we say, you know, there's about a month out of the year where we don't have an acting gig. When we don't have a script in our hands, we become very neurotic.
Oh.
We become pathological. But given this script is the fruition of a lifetime. It really is. I'm very, very pleased to have a whole year to work on it.
Oh, yeah, and, of course, you mentioned workshopping it in Florida.
Yes.
Will they give you the kind of feedback you think to take it to another level, do you hope?
I hope so. The Seaside Repertory is down there. I'm going to be working with them a little bit, although I think down there we're going to do it in a park, indoors, and I'm also going to be connected with the community in different ways. I'm going to be connected with students in the area to help. They're going to be my stage management and my helper, like Lauren Pope is here as a little waif, little homeless girl that we buddy up with in this version of it. So there's going to be some different elements. It's all also going to be geared toward the Fringe Festival circuit and what we can do to simplify and make it very accessible for whatever space we're in to be able to do it. Everything comes out of a grocery cart. All the props come out of a grocery cart. And so it's have Shakespeare, will travel.
Oh, yeah, and it would be, of course, I'm in no position to tell anybody or suggest anything, but doing it in a park.
Doing it in a park is perfect.
That would be great.
It's perfect, and we're hoping to do it in Florida. It should, hopefully, I don't know, February, though, it might be kind of chilly.
In Florida, it's still
yeah.
on the chilly side. But
yeah.
What a great setting for
yes,
a show like
yes.
that.
Yes, yes. I've done Shakespeare in the park for years and years. And in fact, Karen is always, less is more, Tilson, less is more. I'm so used to competing with airplanes and dogs and kids. And in Minneapolis, I worked for 4 years year-round. And we did parks and community centers, and I loved it. You got to see the same people year after year, and you got to see these little kids grow up, and they'd share their food with us before and after the shows. It was just a great community, a sense of community, and I really loved that.
Oh, sure. Well,
yeah.
Great idea, great concept. Sounds like you've got something really worthwhile.
I do.
For you and for the community.
Yes, and then at Florida, the seaside business, you need to be working on something in the future, too. So I'm going to be starting on Tempest as the next play, a one-man Tempest.
Oh, wow. So
yeah.
You're going to do a series of those.
Yes. Yes, my own repertory. I am my own theater.
Well, that's the best way to do it, I guess. No competition.
No competition.
Yeah,
and don't have to worry about getting cast.
That's true. You always get cast, yes. That's for sure. Poor Lear, a one-man, one-hour adaptation of Shakespeare's King Lear, directed by Taylor St. John, performed by Alan Tilson. It's a partnership with the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater and a benefit for the Homeless Services Coalition of Greater Kansas City. Performances begin this Thursday, the 17th at 7:30 p.m., Friday the 18th at 7:30, Saturday the 19th at 7:30, and a Sunday afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. Performances will be held at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater of Kansas City on their stage, where Alan's performed in many other roles before, located at 3604 Main Street in Kansas City, and the number to call for more information, 816-569-3226. Poor Lear, featuring Alan Tilson, a reimagining, as it says here, of Shakespeare's King Lear as a homeless man this time, and what he has to go through, what he has created for himself, and how he survives it. If, in fact, he survives it, we'll have to see what happens. We can't give away the ending and all of that. But he has to come to terms, at least, with his own mortality.
He does. Absolutely. Yes.
One of the things involved. Again, the number to call, 816-569-3226. Well, I want to thank Alan for coming.
Well, thank you, Michael. Oh, and I want to shout out to Kathy Peters, president of KKFI. Love you. Love you. Love your mom.
Yeah, we're keeping her busy.
Yeah, I bet you are. She's doing a wonderful job.
This is quite a thing to handle.
With you guys, I'm sure it is.
Oh, yeah. She needs that law degree to
yes,
handle
she
all
does.
Of us.
She does.
Thanks so much for being with
thank
us.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, thanks
thank
for
you.
Being with us. The Jazz Jazz Insider is next. Great jazz. Information behind the jazz is especially good. The story behind a recording, the musicians involved, when and where it took place. Very interesting. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you